Another mother solved the problem this way. She put one phone in the kitchen. The kids had conversations. Mom was usually around. Phones are nowhere near as much fun when the folks are there listening in. I'm Dr. Ray.
This is Full-Time Catholic Radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the Internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Extremely interesting guest this hour. He's a painter. He's Russian, although he lives now in the United States, in, of all places, Brentwood, Tennessee. His name is Igor Babalov, and he has painted popes. He has painted presidents of the United States, presidents of other countries. He has painted Vladimir Putin, Nelson Mandela, mayors such as Rudy Giuliani. He has painted great artists such as the Japanese film director Akira Kurosawa and the great pianist Byron Janis. A brand new portrait painted by Igor Babalov was recently inducted into the Mount Vernon Museum outside of Washington, D.C., and he was awarded an award for the excellence of his work by General David Petraeus. He is an extremely honored man. He has a great body of work, which you can see on the Internet if you put in his name. And I'll spell it. It's Igor, but it's B-A-B-A-I-L-O-V. He has his own website, which will pop up first. But that if you click on images, you'll get an idea of the range and the beauty of his work. Igor, I'm really, really pleased to have you on Church and Culture. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, I look through your portraits, and, you know, I saw your portrait of President Bush, of Pope Benedict and St. John Paul, and I know that you are working on a portrait of Pope Francis yet?
No, not yet. I'm presently working on this.
You're working.
It's in my studio. It's up on the easel, and I'm working on this.
Wonderful. And as I look through your portraits, I had a question that I've always wanted to ask a portrait artist, and because when you go back into the history of art and people like Velazquez and Rubens and others, Renoir, especially among the French portrait painters, do you have to like the person that you're painting? Or can you do justice to them even if you don't care for them?
Well, to be a portrait painter, you have to you have to love the people to begin with, and regardless of their titles and who they are, you just have to have that love for people, because you look at the person it's the most perfect God's creation, and that's how you see the person, and you're trying to to find all this unique, the most unique, distinct features of that person, because we are all unique. It's actually part of the uniqueness is that it's that our beauty. We're all beautiful, regardless again of.
Thomas Aquinas would say that everything that is good, regardless of its moral evil. Even he said, even Satan was beautiful and good.
Well, right. It's the portraitist. I think should always see the beauty in everything, even like areas like what's
even in Vladimir Putin, for example.
Well, we can get to that in a minute. But
okay.
I was going to say the war, like quite often, the artists, when they portray the war, they portray only ugliness in that. And it is very, very ugly.
Well, I must say that your portrait of Putin makes him, it seems to me, very accurate in that it shows him to be a rather hard and cold man.
Well, with President Putin, he's I did his portrait in 2002 when he just became president,
Even President Bush liked him in 2002.
He appeared very, very pleasant man, although he doesn't talk much, but very charming.
Did you get to do President Gorbachev ever?
No, I've met him briefly.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have dinner with him one night. He had a huge portrait of his late wife Raisa right above the desk in his office.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a wonderful face. But you've had this remarkable opportunity to sit and look at some of the most famous people and some of the most powerful and influential people of this and the last century. You must at times sort of want to pinch your arm and ask, how did this happen?
Well, it's interesting question, I guess, because of my studies, my education, and a lot in a way too, but I've been blessed to meet so many interesting people.
And you left your home country in 1990, and so have you lived in the United States ever since 1990?
I moved to Canada. I lived in Canada for some time, and in the United States time since 2002, and I'm an American citizen and very proud of that. But I'm all over the place.
I noticed that you've taught at the Florence Academy of Art.
Yes, I have in 1999. I was going to mention, speaking of art and artists, that there are no really boundaries for art, for not just in terms of artistic expression. In a way, sometimes I'm thinking to myself, when I'm in my studio, I would just take, if it was in my power, I would take the eraser, my eraser, and just erase all the borders.
Yes.
That's the great
thing about art and beauty. It unites people rather than divides people.
Exactly. And I see myself in some ways as an ambassador, if you will, of culture and bringing people together.
Well, where did at some point you must have had a career breakthrough. I mean, to be a painter, to have painted American presidents, popes, three popes, I guess.
Yes.
All of these powerful and people in the world of politics and culture and the arts. What was that breakthrough moment when you began to paint in this august company of people?
It's really hard to say that there was a a particular portrait which I can consider like the breaking point, because I've been painting so to speak, famous people ever since I was a student, when I was still a student at the academy, and I've met a lot of interesting people, and every person I paint is like, I'm just to me, it's a person, it's a human being before anything.
It is a human being, but it's also very specific kind of personality, and in some cases you must have some foreknowledge of their reputation, and you might have certain expectations about the who has surprised you the most in terms of your expectation of them and when you actually met them.
Well, it's every person I meet is a new stage in my career, and it's something very new, something unexplored yet. And again, I'm looking at that person as an artist from the artistic point of view. And my mission is to find that uniqueness that person has portrayed and put it on canvas. So it's a study, it's exploration of the world to me. It's like sometimes people say even that, it's like, do you paint a landscape? Because I'm known as a portrait. And I say, of course I do. Because, you know, if you look in the history of art, the artists, they never called themselves a portrait artist or landscape artist or a butterfly artist, you know, whatever. It's they were just artists with a capital A. And they were, because the artist is, basically, it's a profession. I say it's a profession by God. To glorify God's creation. So you should be being impressed and inspired by beauty around you.
Well, Igor, I must say you really didn't answer my question, though. There must have been a moment in your career when suddenly you were commissioned to do somebody famous for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, it's like I said, okay, let's go back to my students here. When I would be appointed by my academy to be amongst celebrities, for example, like the Russian celebrities.
What are we, the ballet dancers? What kind of celebrities?
You know, entertainment people from the entertainment.
Like opera singers or...
It's various songwriters, actors, authors, all kinds of different people. So at that time, when I was still a student, of course, it was a big deal. And then kind of gradually it was progressing on a different level. And then it went to, and still is, like, I'm painting everybody. Like one entertainer said you are you're painting everyone from beggar to general.
so did the great Rubens. Not Rubens or Rembrandt. So did Rembrandt.
Exactly. If you're an artist, you don't set up you don't make a list. This is a more special person than this one, because everyone for me as an artist is a special person. It just happened that some of them are on a higher level, in a social level, in a political level, or whatever. But in the end, we are all God's children.
And you, are you Russian Orthodox, or what is your faith tradition?
Yes, I'm Russian Orthodox, was baptized in Russian Orthodox. But one bishop said, so it's close enough.
Yeah, and you, why did you choose Tennessee of all places? I mean, it's a long way from Leningrad and Moscow and the Russian Academy of Arts to Brentwood, Tennessee.
Well, I used to live...
Now, is that outside of Nashville, isn't it?
Right. It's outside of Nashville, yes. So I must ask this question quite often. And the answer is very simple, because it's, you know, your home is where you feel at home. And Tennessee is a beautiful place, and it reminds me in some ways of the Urals, where I come from originally. Sure. And it's got hills and the skies, very low skies.
But there's no Pushkin.
Yes, but there are airports. You can get in a plane, and in an hour and a half, you can be in Manhattan.
Okay. And the because I'm a little bit familiar with the history of Russian literature and how it was grounded in the poetry of Alexander Pushkin. And do you think there is such a thing? I mean, people talk about Russian art. They talk about the Russian soul. Do you think there is such a thing as the Russian soul when it comes to arts?
Well, it's I would say yes, because let's say, speaking of portraiture in the arts, for Russian artists, the portraiture was always a psychological study.
Right.
If you will, if you compare to, if you take Russian artists and some Western artists, great artists, you can, and when you, once you know that, once you think of that side, you notice that the Russian artists would try not to go for the some superficial effects, let's say darks and lights together and some like disturbing contrasts, which are very pleasant, sometimes very pleasant to the eye. So instead, their portrait would be a psychological study, not inside the person's the inner world. As a portraitist, I would probably answer your question this way.
I'm talking with Igor Babelov, who is a very well-known, I should say internationally known, painter, primarily of portraits. He has painted two popes already, Pope Benedict XVI and Saint John Paul the Great, and he has been commissioned to do a painting of Pope Francis. Now, let me ask you, do you get any face time with the Pope when you paint them?
Well, it's just like in my previous portraits, Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI, Benedict XVI, especially, I've met with him twice. Once before I started the portrait, when I did the sketches, him live sketches, and after the portrait was already presented, again we met in Vatican in the Apostolic Palace. With John Paul II, I've met because he was very ill already at the time, it was in 2003, and I met with him after the portrait was presented. And but of course, any time with the Pope, it's like the time doesn't exist, basically. It lasts forever.
Do they call you out of the blue and say, Igor, we have another Pope, we need another painting? I mean, is that how it goes?
Let's say when I did the portrait of my first papal portrait of John Paul II, that was done for, it was commissioned for the 25th pontificate of the Pope, and also to commemorate the World Youth Day, which at the moment was created by him. And and then after that, this Pope Benedict already Vatican already knew me. So that was, they provided, Vatican provided the opportunity to sit in a very close range next to the Pope to do my study, my preliminary study for the portrait.
It appears, Igor, from your biography that you were something of a prodigy. You painted your first portrait at age of four, and you started your classical training at nine. You in fact mention a couple of portrait artists, but the one, of course, who pops out to me is the American artist Whistler. And I do think, as I look through your paintings, that Whistler is, if you don't mind me saying so, a definite influence on your style. Is that fair to say?
Well, Whistler graduated from the Russian Academy.
And, yes.
Whistler, all his life, you don't see this information quite often, he actually said, he calls himself Russian, believe it or not, in the sense that the education and his formation he received in Russia as an artist. But then there is another one, another side of the story, that how Whistler got to be in Russia is because of his father, who was a great engineer, was hired by the Tsar to build the first railroad from St. Petersburg.
Nicholas II or Nicholas the First?
Right.
Or,
So it's a very, very, the history is very, very interesting. There was a lot of closeness at the time, you know, in the late 1800s, between Russia and the United States. It's when I read this history, it's amazing. It's how close the two nations used to be.
And it's true. And of course, Russia had a very historic relationship with France. In fact, at the imperial court, did they speak primarily French?
Yes, it was a court language in Russia, and for French, it was a huge honor to be selected by the Russian aristocracy to go to Russia and to coach their children in language and the manners, the European manners. And French was very, very important for the Russian upper society. Yes, for sure.
So do you? So you're centered in Nashville, Tennessee. But you must constantly be it's traveling. You must constantly be on airplanes. Doesn't that get in the way of concentrated work?
Well, it's that's actually how it was. It's I travel. I gather my commissions, and then sometimes my students, I'm painting them. So.
Oh, do you have you have students in Nashville? Or do you have students all over the world?
I have students. I have students all over the world, yes. I teach in Nashville and give master workshops around the country and outside the country. To me, I think it's very important to share my knowledge and view as a teacher. You know this, how it's in our blood almost, you know, like to share that knowledge with the
I want to remind our listeners that my guest today is a very famous portrait painter from Russia that lives in Tennessee named Igor Babelov. And they can go, our listeners can go to the internet and go to his website. All I have to do is Google his name, Igor Babelov, that's B-A-B-Y, excuse me, that's my way of pronouncing it, B-A-B-A-I-L-O-V, and you will see his website, but you will also see a number of paintings. We have just a few minutes before we have to take a break, it'll come back, but what do you say to people who say that your style is too conservative?
What is conservative style? I mean, I paint something that is recognizable to people, and I'm trying to reproduce the beauty of God's creation on my paintings. So how can I call that conservative?
Well, I wouldn't, but I know you know it, you know, and I know There are people who would say that.
Right. Well, you know, there's something else also I can say that if you look at the old masters and some, let's say, although they were my teachers in many ways, and I am a contemporary artist, and I paint basically today's life with an old language, if you will.
Well, I think that, you know, as I look through your images, and I think that there is a wonderful connection to the great portrait artists of old, including my favorite, John Singer Sargent, and Ange, a great French portrait painter. And I, you know, I also know that I think your painting of Ronald Reagan is the best one I've ever seen.
I haven't painted Ronald Reagan.
Well, why do I get Ronald Reagan when I put in your name?
Oh, there was it was another artist painting, but you're probably looking at the 10 best portrait artists.
Yes. There is an article here under in a magazine called Ask Men,
right,
where you are listed as one of the, it says, the finest living portrait artist, and you are number three. You didn't do Reagan, but you know, has George W. Bush the only American president you've ever painted?
And George Washington.
Ah, how can we forget that? You just got that put into the Mount Vernon Museum. I'm talking with Igor Babelov about his amazing career as a painter, just honored by General David Petraeus for his excellence in art. And we will take a short break and be back talking about painting.
That Santa's helpers go to school to learn how to be super and spiritual Santas? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Join me on Power from the Pews to hear Father Joseph Marquis tell us about the St. Nicholas Institute. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
What's the path to true happiness? Turns out our bodies can answer that question better than we can. A recent study by UCLA and the University of North Carolina found that people who pursued happiness primarily through pleasure produced fewer disease-fighting antibodies and experienced more joint swelling than people who pursued happiness by being loving and trying to lead meaningful lives. Although both groups claimed to be equally happy, researchers found that only the participants who worked hard to be loving, virtuous people were happy all the way down to the cellular level. Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body tells us that we can know God's intention for our lives and relationships by reflecting on the design of our bodies. Science and faith agree. The path to true bone-deep happiness is to love your neighbor and to live virtuously. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by our day sponsor. To celebrate the feast day of St. Cecilia, patroness of musicians, and in memory of Aziz Dabish, from his granddaughter Heather. Also for all expectant mothers, just like Heather, who's expecting a baby girl in February. If you want to be a day sponsor and or want to say a message for a loved one or friend, call 877-288-1077.
I'm back talking with painter, Russian-born, now an American citizen, Igor Babelov, who has painted Pope Benedict XVI. He has painted St. John Paul the Great. He is in the process of completing a commission to paint Pope Francis. He's painted President Bush. He's painted Vladimir Putin, Nelson Mandela, Rudy Giuliani. Surprised you accepted that one. But also my favorite film director, Kurosawa, Japanese, and one of my favorite pianists, Byron Janis. But recently he painted a portrait of George Washington, our first president, which was officially inducted into the Mount Vernon Museum. Now, that's about 15 minutes from me, from where I live, Igor, so I'm going to go over and look at it.
Yes, and I'll just let me know when you do it, and I'll tell you more the story of the portrait, and unless I can share it.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you must have a number of other paintings in the Washington area. I mean, where is the President Bush's? Oh, that's at the Bush Presidential Library in Dallas.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. But what other paintings do you know offhand, other paintings you have hanging in the Washington, D.C. area?
Oh, gosh. That's
not fair. I know. Have you done any Supreme Court justices?
Yes, I've done a portrait, actually, of the oldest judge in the state of New York.
Joseph Sullivan?
Yes, Joseph Sullivan, and the Honorable Joseph Sullivan.
Very venerable man in legal circles, and particularly in the New York area. And
right.
The world of high society, I noticed that you have a number of really lovely, I should say beautiful paintings of society, women, society, men. But one thing I was struck by is that none of them seem narcissistic, if I may be so bold. I mean, they didn't look like those puffy aristocrats that Goya had to do and other painters, which they sort of made fun of in their paintings. It seems to me that the people that you have commissioned to get painted portraits from you seem like people that are not on an ego trip, as I look at the paintings.
Like I said, it's probably because of my, everybody is different, and in their looks and their likenesses, but it's probably my perception of the world and of people I paint it contributes to my work. Because I see only beauty in the person, whoever the person is. And then, of course, let me give you an example. Like, let's say there's someone painted a portrait of, let's say, Queen Elizabeth, where the artist counted every single wrinkle on that portrait. And to me, it's not...
That's not
Wait.
Fair. That is not fair. Is it? It's just not fair.
It's not just about it, because the wrinkle makes it nostalgic in the person. It's like sometimes, people ask me how come I painted Pope John Paul II so young, because the portrait was painted in 2003. Mm-hmm. And he was an old man, and in great suffering, and he looked on the painting, he looks much, much younger. He looks like in his 50s. And my answer is always this, that most of our life we are young and energetic, and we are old only for a very short period of time. So why to portray that short period of time? Because the painting goes far beyond photography. It lasts forever. It takes only 450 years oil paint to dry completely. So imagine how many generations you'll be looking at that particular person. So it's you really have to think in terms of eternity.
Why did you? I noticed that in your painting of St. John Paul the Great, that you placed him among other figures with a cross in the background.
Right, right.
That's a little bit unusual, I think, in your work. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, because John Paul II was known as the People's Pope, and because of the painting was commemorating in the way it was done at the time of that commemoration of the adult youth days, I decided to include the younger people around him, which are in a way they represent the future, and well, our present, our future, and there's a lot of. All of them, all of the youth around him, they all represent certain values. If you just go up around the painting, like, and to the right of the Pope, there is a traditional family under the cross, and there is an African girl who's praying for a better future. As you know, it's the most suffering place on earth to live. Then there is a Filipino girl holding a candle, just lots of joy on her expression and on the face, and which represents the faith, the joy of faith. Then there is on the other side of John Paul II, there is a priest holding the Bible,
yes,
symbolizing a new generation of a priest and carrying the teachings of John Paul. Then there is below him, there is a little Afghani girl, a Pakistani girl, and she's hugging with her little beautiful dark hands, she's hugging this porcelain figure of Blessed Mother.
Now, I noticed that you had to do Johnny Cash at some point, right? Since you live in Nashville.
No. I had a student who was related in the family to Johnny Cash. But no, I didn't do Johnny Cash.
Well, there is a portrait of Johnny Cash on the internet with your name attributed to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
So you better know. You better look at that.
Okay.
And
okay.
So have you done any of the country singers?
No. I haven't done any country music singers, and I've met some. I've met some here, of course, living here, and but no, I haven't done any portraits yet. I will probably.
Are you a fan of country music at all?
I can listen to that. It's
that's a very diplomatic answer. And the have you done Prince Andrew the only member of the British royal family that you've done?
Right. Yes, that was. That was, I believe it was in November, last November, when it was commissioned to me by the military club in New York, SSMA club, one of the oldest clubs in the country. And it was presented to him, which is now in the Buckingham Palace.
That must have been a great occasion for you to be able to, does this hang, where does this portrait hang, in New York City?
No, the portrait is in the Buckingham Palace in London.
Well, that's got to be a thrill for you.
It is. It is, of course. And it was interesting that about a month later, after the portrait was presented, and his private secretary contacted me and he asked me if I would be willing to give the right to reproduce the painting.
By the way, I'm looking at it. That's a really striking portrait. Congratulations. It's a really
nice
portrait.
Of course, you
left out his golf clubs.
Thank you.
Well, did you know he's a huge golfer?
Well, I'm sure he is. I didn't know that because particularly for me, what was important is to portray different sides of it in a composition.
But you got his royal side.
Exactly. The royal side, the connection to Navy, and you know, because it was in the event when it was presented to him, it was the connection between the Royal Navy and the American Navy. So
yeah, his military.
Yeah.
By the way, I knew President Bush pretty well personally, and I must say that you caught his compassion. You caught his humility and his compassion, a side of him that not a lot of people appreciated. You have a softness. You have a softness on his face, which I think is very real with him.
Right. Yeah, that's actually Karen Hughes, his advisor. She remarked that too. She said that it captures his.
Karen Hughes knows him better than anybody.
Right. But it's and the president liked it, and I know I've received over the years. I received many kudos for this portrait, and
Did you have you ever had somebody just hate their portrait?
No, actually.
I mean, this is an interview. I have to ask questions like that.
No? Absolutely. I appreciate it. And it's, you know, you got me right on the spot with this question, because I have to really, like, you know, like, search in my files, in my mind, if there was anything like this. And no, it's because in my procedure, I guess, you know, because when you're working on a commission portrait, it's different than, let's say, when you work on something for yourself. And so in that procedure, I make very, very clear that my client would be involved in the creation of a portrait. So they know the position, they know... you know, they see the preliminary sketches, and so it's usually it's there is no surprise. But and the other thing is, of course, when I paint, it's perhaps my experience kind of kicks in, you know, to go. It's you know, because being a portrait is, you have to. You have to love people. You have to know how to deal with people. You have to know what they like, what they don't like. So certain things, you know, like they, because in the end of the day, they have to live with that portrait. They have to see it all the time. And but the important thing, of course, the number one is for me to do all these things to please the person without undermining my own
integrity.
Right.
I have to ask this question. I mean, you did a portrait of one man who I know is very easy to like, and that's Regis Philbin. Mm-hmm. And why the image of the Brooklyn Bridge behind him? Is Regis Philbin from Brooklyn?
Right. Well, it's. I'm glad that it reads in my painting, because that's where he came from. And for people, especially the New Yorkers, or people who live around New York, it's always to live in Manhattan. It's like you made it, basically. And for those, especially from Brooklyn, Bronx, and from around from Queens, you know, like it's a dream for them, you know, to be actually in Manhattan. And he's the Brooklyn guy who made it in Manhattan and made it big.
Now there's he did. He's very successful, and very, because he was so darn likable, which you pick up in your painting. By the way, there's one painting that I see here, Shadows of Soul. It sort of stands out among your paintings. It's slightly more abstract, although it's, I wouldn't call it an abstract painting. It has man and a woman. They seem to be caught. The wind seems to be blowing across them from the front across their face and their hair. Their chins are lifted. Their eyes are closed. What's the story behind Shadows of Soul?
Well, those paintings are based on a sculpture by a great American sculptor, Frederick Hartt.
I thought it looked like a heart. In fact, when I looked at it, I thought, is that a sculpture or a painting? You have one, two,
right.
Three, four, five, six, seven figures, I believe. There's some nudes. They're beautifully done. And what was the occasion of doing a painting based upon a heart sculpture?
First of all, if you look in the history of art, it's been a common thing for the artists, the painters, to paint sculptures. Because when you paint a sculpture, you are dealing basically with a monochromatic image. So you use usually two or three maximum colors. This way, it's like an exercise to polish your knowledge of tonal values, which is very,
right.
very important. It's a very technical thing in art, but the tonal values is something which always existed in nature, and this is what the realist artists always have to know. Because if you get that particular color white or darker than it should be, it will be off completely. So the painting sculptures helps to manage to keep intact that skill of tonal values. The second reason, I've done many paintings of different sculptures, but in particular Frederick Hartt, I think when I like that particular painting, which the Shadow of Souls were based on, those are the fragments of his ex-Nihilo, magnificent ex-Nihilo.
He was a Catholic artist.
He was. Well, he was not in the beginning, and then he converted to Catholicism.
Yes.
Yes.
And he did beautiful nude sculpture. And
famous is the one. Is the one above the entrance to the National Cathedral.
Right, National Cathedral. And I don't think he got, in my opinion, the recognition from the Catholic community that he should have received before he died.
Right. Well, I totally agree with you. In fact, not just the Catholic community in general in America, because there was his sculptures are not anywhere in any museum in the United States. When I found out that was almost devastating for me to hear.
Well, his day will come. His day will come.
Oh, yes, it will.
I mean, the beauty of it, of his work, will speak for itself.
Right.
And his,
right.
I mean, how many artists can we name that were completely unacknowledged in their lifetime, including Van Gogh and other, you know, just over and over again, some of our greatest painters got no respect during their lifetime.
Right. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And with Frederick Hartt, he also did this the famous Three Soldiers Memorial in Washington, dedicated to Vietnam soldiers.
Right. And probably a lot of people see that memorial and they don't realize the greatness of the
right.
art. Have you done memorials yet?
Memorials? No.
Mm-hmm.
No. But speaking of Hartt, I actually did his portrait, and you can see it on my website. It was posthumous portrait because I found out about him after he was already deceased. And the portrait is now in the collection of the Shrine, John Paul II Shrine in Washington, D.C.
Well, I'm looking at your portrait now, and so this was your way of paying tribute to an artist that
exactly.
you greatly respected?
Exactly. So I basically put the face to the sculptures, all the magnificent masterpieces.
Very interesting pose you have him in. Very interesting mm-hmm. pose with his hands
right.
outstretched and kind of beckoning
right.
to the viewer.
Right, right.
And the light is kind of coming up from under his bearded chin. It's a very, very compelling piece. And you have the National Cathedral in the background.
Exactly, National Cathedral and the silhouette of the Daughters of Odessa, his sculpture, which is actually the children of Tsar Nicholas, the Russian Tsar.
Ah!
Frederick Hart, yeah, yeah.
You got the Romanovs in there.
Well, he was fascinated by the Russian royal family history.
Well, who isn't? I mean, that's a variant. You must be. I mean, I am. I mean, what an amazing story that is. What a tragic story that is.
Right, right.
I mean, I saw something in your biography about your being part of a group, Russian Nobility Association?
Yes, there is such an association.
And does that mean you're in the lineage of some sort of a noble family?
Well, actually, my mom, she comes from the Kudashevs, and the Kudashevs, they even had their coat of arms. So it's a noble family, Kudashev.
So you were a white Russian?
No. See, I think it's very interesting to look into your heritage, and especially for me as a portrait painter, because any work I do, it's basically eventually it will be in someone's household and someone's heritage.
Now your mother and father must have lived through the Stalin years.
Well, my mom's side, there's actually he was a brother of my grandmother. I don't know if it's not too complicated.
Stalin was?
But in my mom's family, her mom's brother, he was in a high position in Moscow in 1937, and he was, you know, it was like KGB, or they were called NKVD in those days.
Yes.
And never came back. It was one of 25 million people who suffered. So it's actually, there's a painting on my website. You can see where the murals
page, yes,
the multi-figurative paintings, and you can see that image of that painting.
So when you were growing up in Russia, did you hear stories about those days? Did you hear about life under that particular tyrant?
Yes, absolutely. Even at the time when Stalin was still alive, they knew about the atrocities. But, you know, in Russia there was expression that even wolves have ears. So you have to be very careful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Stalin basically killed all of his original followers, all of his original core group.
Right.
So that they wouldn't threaten his power.
Right. Actually, I was fortunate just a few days ago. I was fortunate to meet a biographer of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and I'm sure you know him, Joseph Pierce.
Oh, yeah, Joseph, yes. Well, Joseph's a good friend of ours. He's been on this show.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And he visited my studio, and it was interesting, because we have a little tiny connection, I guess, with Joseph at that time, before we met, that he was his biographer, and I
had
a portion of his grandchildren, so, of Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Did you, like Joseph Pierce, go through a period of being a member of a racist gang?
No, we didn't go there.
that's not what you have in common.
No. What we have in common is, and I think I haven't met him for long enough, you know, to really to get to know him.
Oh, he's a wonderful guy. I hope to visit you someday in Nashville myself. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Very welcome, please.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that I'm talking to a wonderful and very renowned portrait painter, Igor Pavelov, who lives outside Nashville, but he's from Russia, working on a portrait of Pope Francis, and his work can be seen on the Internet and visit his website. His last name is spelled B-A-B-A-I-L-I-V. Igor, thanks for being a guest on Church and Culture.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I look forward to meeting you someday. For all of you that are listening, please hang around after this short message, and we'll have another interesting guest.
Is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Peace be with you. We hear this phrase often, but do we understand what it means coming from Jesus? According to the Gospel of John, Jesus came and stood among the disciples and said to them, "Peace be with you." This was after his resurrection, and Jesus offered this peace to the disciples who deserted him during his passion and death. That should give us hope, because we know sometimes we desert Jesus too. Yet through the sacrament of reconciliation, we have direct access to his peace. The next time you go to confession, listen for the words that grant pardon and peace. Through the sacraments, God provides his grace and love. These help us hold to his peace in times of struggle. Let us pray that we can enjoy ever more deeply the peace that comes from Jesus through his mercy and forgiveness. To learn more about this peace, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan on Facebook or at cbsmich.org.
Are you tired of the way your faith is represented in the mainstream media? Stop getting your Catholic news from secular sources and get it from a trusted local Catholic source instead. At the Michigan Catholic Newspaper, we're Catholic, and we cover your Catholic Church in a way that only Catholics could. For the same reason you listen to Ave Maria, get the Michigan Catholic for just $24 a year by calling 313-224-8000 or visit themichigancatholic.com.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On the next Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo continues with the RCA for Catholic Catechetical series. He's continuing a sub-series on the sacraments of the Church, and on our next program he discusses the Eucharist. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 7, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the light. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the answer.
Christ is the answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Who should be in charge of education reform? Government agencies or parents and teachers? Today on Homeschool Heartbeat, Governor Bobby Jindal explains why we need to put education back in the hands of local communities.
Governor Jindal, when you were recently asked about what you thought was the most pressing issue facing Louisiana, you said education reform. What aspects of education need to be reformed?
Well, look, there are two things that we absolutely focused on here in Louisiana. And the first was that we wanted the dollar to follow the child instead of making the child follow the dollar. And what does that really mean? That means we trust parents to be the best people in the world to make the right decisions about their children's education. The second thing we fought for was in our public schools, we want to make sure that we had good teachers, and that means that we're actually hiring and evaluating and compensating teachers, not just based on how long they're there, but how effective they are, how well students are doing. The results are today.